the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site for the Arizona Cardinals. With me is co-host Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. We're at Senior Bowl week. I'm guessing next week we can talk about the performance of the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Bowl, but we get to talk about the playoffs. We're episode 511. We now have two Super Bowl teams, and in this show, we're going to try and talk from a Cardinals perspective what we liked, what we saw in the two conference title games, and then we're going to do a little bit off-season stuff talking about cap moves that you probably heard some of them, but what are some things that the Cardinals can do cap-wise to save some money, because that's what we're going to see all the time. So that's where we're getting started. Seth, we're now down to the final two teams, and I will say, when it came to the wagering side of things, it was a really, really good weekend for me. It's not how I wanted things to go, but of the basic game picks, I went 5-1. The only thing that I was wrong on was the total in the 49ers-Ravens game, and
I think that's because neither one of us thought that the Ravens would just not do anything offensively.
But yeah, the 49ers Lions game, but I nailed the pick for both the I had Kansas City winning and covering, which, you know, win is a cover for them because they were underdogs, and then the total going under. And then I had some, in the end of the total of the 10, I think, or 11 props, total bets that I made, I came out, I think, 9.5 units up, which was a really good weekend.
Yeah, massive day. Rashee Rice should have cashed one of my big bets. I parlayed he and, Debo Samuel both over 80 yards. Well, both over, and then both laddered over 80 yards. And, of course, penalties. And the bad part about that penalty was it really wasn't even a penalty. If you follow enough offensive line people like I do, because as I try to tell people every year when I talk about offensive linemen during the draft, I don't know enough about the offensive line play. It's impossible to understand and know enough. I listen to the experts, and these guys are really good. And when the experts who have no, horse in the race are coming out saying wasn't a penalty, I go, I got screwed.
So I had a couple of nice payout ones. One was the combo Isaiah Pacheco touchdown and Chiefs win. That was plus 325. That was a good one. And then I had the winning margin of 49ers 1-6. That was plus 375, I think. So those were my big winners.
And by the way, you mentioned on the show a flyer with Elijah Mitchell.
Oh yeah, that was a throw to the plus 1100. What the heck? And then what does he do? And he goes to score a touchdown. Woo! Yeah,
I mean, that was a great pull, Jess. I mean, I know you didn't bet it, but we talk about those type of plays all the time. Like, those are the plays that you go with and you try to hit and see what happens. That was a great pull. I got the Alan McNeil sack. That was a good one. I thought we were kind of just all over everything. I don't think we were shocked about anything. We told you about the two touchdowns for Christian McCaffrey. We told you not to bet it because truthfully, it wasn't a good enough juice, right? But, like, it hit, and good thing we didn't recommend three touchdowns, because, man, that would have been a bad beat, the one-yard line, right? And then, personally, I mean, something I didn't talk about, because I wait till the day of the game to make sure injury reports and everything like that. I had a a massive one personally. Jameson Williams' first touchdown score of the game, plus 3,000. So that was a nice one to get, you know, to get the weekend kind of wrapped up while I had everything else already already bet on the games and things like that. So it was a profitable weekend, but like you and I said, man, it was unfortunate because we were really close to having a Super Bowl that you and I would be incredibly indifferent on in a positive way. Like, yeah, who cares? We either get to see a new dynasty born or, you know, the Detroit Lions win their first Super Bowl in franchise history. And instead, now we have to root hard for the Kansas City Chiefs,
which I'm okay with, honestly. But let's start with that Chiefs Ravens game. And, you know, it was literally what we said basically the entire postseason. I put Patrick Mahomes, especially postseason time, in the category, don't bet against him until you've been given a reason to bet against him. And everything about that game, everything about the matchup between the two teams is that Baltimore is the better team. Baltimore had basically a better constructed team from top to bottom. But the difference is that the combination of Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Andy Reid as a head coach, on top of the fact that this Kansas City defense is great this year. This is a team, and here's kind of the fun stat about this in the 20 games that they've played this year. They're 6-14 over, and so the 14 of their 20 games, the under has hit, which is a testament to I think sports books still view the Chiefs as a high flying offense. I think they naturally put the totals a little bit high, but the fact that their defense is just really good and the Ravens, frankly, were not able to do what they are able, like they had to abandon the run, which is the bread and butter of their game. And then they had a combination of like three things in the second half that were just critically wrong. The Zay Flowers, the combo of his taunting penalty and then the end zone fumble and then Lamar's end zone interception. That was basic all she wrote. The Chiefs scored 17 first half points and didn't win again. Didn't score again and still won the game by a touchdown.
Well, and what was interesting to me is that this was a game where you saw that, as you kind of pointed out, a lot of times the better constructed team isn't going to win when the best player in the universe is on the other side. And this is kind of, you know, the Tom Brady effect. And you know, maybe it's a little too soon to put him in that category, but I mean, four Super Bowls in six seasons.
He's on track. I mean, he's on that side of, like, we've never seen a career arc like that. And Patrick Mahomes is on that arc right now. Now, granted, Tom Brady basically had two separate, like, Hall of Fame careers.
Right.
Yeah, the one before he was 30, and then after, like, basically, you could look at his career and you could probably say he had two or three Hall of Fame careers in the same career.
Yeah. And so, you know, and nobody, but to your point, nobody's ever started like Patrick Mahomes has in his career. I mean, his start is better than Brady's because you put the statistical and MVP prowess with the winning, something that we've just never seen. You know, to go back to your earlier thing, you're accurate in your assessment, but I think the fact that they didn't run the ball was really just an error by Todd Monken. I mean, at the time it was, you know, and I just want to make sure I get it right, but I think the last time they ran the football, yeah. The last time they ran the football, it was 14-7. There was 6 minutes and 18 seconds left in the second quarter the last time they ran the football. I'm sorry, 4 minutes and 53 seconds. And it was with that. That was a handoff to Zay Flowers. Like, what are you doing? You have a dynamic rushing attack. And even in the second half, and this is one of the things that I want to get your opinion on, because there's a lot of conversation about Monk and you know, being a genius and what he's done with Lamar this year. And we saw in multiple games the Cardinals be in a similar situation, 17-7, 21, you know, to 10, whatever, be in a similar situation and continue to run the football, not panic. Continue to stick with their game plan and what made their offense the last eight games, something that we'll probably talk about in a week or two, you know, so darn good. I mean, we're talking, we're literally talking a top 10 offense in EPA per play, which is baffling to even think about, right? With what this team was. Number 10 overall in yards per play. And I just feel like if you're an NFL team looking at coaches and you see kind of like what Todd Monken did in the big moment, and then you see what Drew Petzing did. Now, obviously different moments and things like that, but aren't you like, I want a guy that doesn't freak out, that doesn't abandon what got him to this point at the first sign of anything. And by the way, and you hit it on the head, like, right, 17-10 was the final score. But wasn't the last thing you kind of wanted to do is give the ball back to Patrick Mahomes? Now, granted, he didn't score in the second half, so, you know, and you have that phenomenal Baltimore defense, number one defense in the NFL. But I mean, I just, for me, it almost made me appreciate Petzing a little more.
Honestly, like, look what the Chiefs did. The Chiefs blueprint, and if you kind of look at where their strengths are, you know, they got great quarterback play. They had a tight end that was overwhelming. Travis Kelce, 11 catches, 116 yards and a touchdown. And then you had Isaiah Pacheco grinding out yards. It was not an efficient day, 2.8 yards per carry. But if you look at their offensive strength, and obviously they lack skill at the receiver position, but they have a quarterback, they have a running back, and they have a tight end.
Right. And what team does that sound like, right?
It sounds like the Cardinals. And so I look at this game. Now, I'm not saying that Murray's on the same level as Mahomes, but you can construct this team. So basically the Cardinals' offense, their skill, they're almost there. They could do, like, if they did a little bit more. Now, granted, Rashee Rice, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, those are better receivers than the Cardinals had at the end of the year, obviously. But even if a healthy Hollywood Brown is available to pair with Michael Wilson and Greg Dortch, rather than what they had at the end of the year, then the difference is that the Chiefs' defense was great. And so the Cardinals could do offensively, kind of have the same offensive plan, the offensive identity, without having to become like a high-flying team, looking very much like a traditional, like a modern, not a traditional, but a modern West Coast offense. And if we go back to the offseason before everyone is hired, we looked at, okay, Drew Petzing, his pedigree comes from traditional West Coast offensive coaches, which goes, honestly, Andy Reid is in that tree. And the difference is if the Cardinals are going to be a team like the Chiefs, obviously they need clutch quarterback play, but their defense needs to be. So if they don't do much offensively, if they could completely remake this defense, then you've got a team that could compete the same way that the Chiefs did.
Yeah, and you look at it, it's just, You know, and again, we're going to get into the draft a lot, so I don't want to take up a ton of time with it. But you made a statement that is 1,000% accurate, first off, that the offense isn't that far away. You know, a couple of players here or there is, you know, this is a team that you can not just compete with, but probably like control games with, right? And so people might ask, you know, like, oh, so, you know, why would you, why are you, you know, mocking Marvin Harrison Jr. with the fourth pick? Well, this is, but there's two theories. Like, one, obviously, first off, to me, and when people dive in, I think a lot of people are going to agree, he's the best player in the draft, regardless of position. He's just the best player. He's the best football player in the draft. But two, the defensive prospects in this draft, especially at four, aren't there. There's not a guy like a Will Anderson Jr. That you would be like, you got to take him at four. There's not a corner that you're like, you got to take him at four. So take the best player and finish off that offense instead of potentially taking a Dallas Turner, who's kind of the consensus edge one of the draft at four. And then he ends up being, you know, a 6 to 8 sack a year guy, really good career, but then Marvin Harrison Jr. is a Hall of Famer, right? Like that's kind of the theory behind that. So yeah, finish off the offense, man. Like get it primed. We knew this was a multi-stage, multi-year kind of rebuild, but we'll get to it, but I think the team, and we've talked about it, the team you need to look at, the team you need to kind of say like, oh, this is who we want to be like, is the Detroit Lions. And you see that that growth, and again, we'll get to that in a second. But, you know, overall, I thought the blueprint is there. The Cardinals have work to do on defense. I mean, there's no way around it, basically, right? Like you have to look at it and say this team
here's a couple of guys that, like, if you want to, I would love a Legarius Sneed or a Drew Tranquil,
right,
on this Cardinals defense. And interestingly enough, both Drew Tranquil and Legarius Sneed are free agents.
Well, and you look at the team overall, and so those that, you know, want to know, like, where are the Cardinals? So, like, Legarius Sneed, you know, for instance, and you mentioned he's a free agent, but he was a fourth round pick, right? Like, so again, it wasn't that they got this guy in the first round. He was a top 10 pick. Like, no. Justin Reed, their starting safety, he was a third round pick from Houston. You know, so kind of guy that they signed. Trent McDuffie, wonderful player. He was a first-round pick. George Karloftis, a guy we talked a lot about last year, right? Their best pass rusher. Yes.
Can we say that for all the people that were anti-George Karloftis, I don't understand why anyone thought that someone with that sort of motor length and athleticism was going to be bad.
Struggles? Yeah. Yeah, it's always a question. But, you know, Mike Edwards, safety, he was a free agent signing. Like, you look at their defense and how it's constructed, and it's not like it's teaming with first-round picks. Drew Tranquil, a guy you just mentioned, he was a fourth-round pick by the Chargers in 2019. You know, Willie Gay was a second- or third-round pick. Nick Bolton's a second- or third-round pick. Like, they're guys that, you know, they got towards the end of round two. So they both were end of round two type of guys. Like, those were the guys taking the snaps on defense. A guy that has made a huge impact this year, Charles Omenihue, unfortunately tore his ACL in the game. He was a fifth round pick by Houston. So it's not like, so the guys that were first round picks are Trent McDuffie and George Karloftis, and they were drafted last year. So, like, the rest of them are guys that were on day two, day three. And so you look at that and you're like, maybe they're not as far away as we think, but they're, you know, they still have a
way. They do have a really, 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 really big difference in the fact that they've got a Chris Jones. Yeah, there's that.
but that's the thing is, like, Chris Jones was the guy, obviously, you know, I like to beat my chest that I wanted in 2016. I loved the guy coming out. But again, he was a, yes, early, but he was a day two pick. Like, it's not like they had to draft him in the top four. And the
Cardinals took Robert Kyndici.
Right. And so it's not like they had to draft him in the top four, right? Like, or it's not. So that's the thing is this, it's allegedly should be easier to get talent like Chris Jones drafting fourth overall, but that talent has to be there, right? Like the guy has to be there. And right now I don't see that, but I do see a number of talented guys that could go at 35 and things like that, that fit that role. And so that's what you have to look at is like, how do you build that? Do you get the right guys? Are you able to build the defense? And like you said, sometimes it's about luck too. I mean, nobody expected Chris Jones to be one of the most dominant defensive players in the NFL, or he would have gotten picked much sooner than the Cardinals even picked that year. So that's just, you know, well, kind of how
the whole thing
out
with Chris Jones is there were character questions, just like there were with Kyndici. And it turned out, he just turned out to be, you know, if it weren't for Aaron Donald, you'd be looking at him as probably the best, best interior defender of this generation.
Right. And so it's just crazy to see. So, but yeah, so that, I mean, so to me, that's the real positive coming out of that is that offensively, and we're not, again, there's nobody here saying that Kyler is anywhere close to what Patrick Mahomes is. But there is a reality that they can construct an offense that functions in a similar way. And that would allow this team to be a very talented team sooner than expected.
Coming up next on the Rise of Seer podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Again, looking from a Cardinals lens over the NFC Championship games, the 49ers beat the Detroit Lions. It's coming up next on Rise of Seer Red. We're back on the Rise of Seer podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. The NFC Championship game looked like it was good times. It looked like the Lions were going to run away with this game. And then the second half happened. And, oh, man. I know it's hard to say it this way, but this is one of those games where you hate to see it, but Dan Campbell got in the way. His philosophy, and in fairness, this is how he's always been, but his decision-making ultimately cost them the game. Because definitely makeable field goals. That drive they had late in the game should have been a game-winning drive. And they now granted both plays, like both of their fourth down attempts were doable. And like there were plays there. Like that first one, Josh Reynolds has the drop. Josh Reynolds had another drop later on. And so like there was a pussy. So the plays were there. Bruce Arians, I remember when he in 2017, I think it was, when he went for it on fourth and one in his own territory against the Texans, and it failed. And I remember him saying, I shouldn't have done that. And then the next day after looking at the film, he doubled down. He went back. He rolled it back, and he said, no, that was absolutely the right call. Someone effed up. I mean, and so there were plays there to be made. Like, they could have done it. However, but Dan Campbell put him in a situation like, you have a kicker for a reason. You have a kicker that you trust. Why would you not get points? Because, you know, getting him back up to a 17-point lead would have changed the dynamic of the game and things like that. It just felt like you had so much promise, and then it all sort of fell apart. And the San Francisco offense came alive in the second half after halftime. So this is the 49ers first half possession, missed field goal, touchdown, interception, punt, and then they went field goal, touchdown, touchdown, field goal, touchdown, and then they turned the ball over on downs when time expired at the last. So they scored on their basically on all five of their second half possessions. And the Lions went downs, fumble, punt, downs, touchdown to bring them within three to have to desperation. And so that first drive in the second half, you should have been back up to 17 after San Francisco got the field goal. You know, they have the turnover, and then they turn the ball over on downs again. Like, that would have been when you lose by three and you left 6 points in field goals on the field, that's really, to me, and knowing that the part that I worry about is I look at, that's totally a Jonathan Gannon thing to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, but you live by the sword and you die by the sword. So, you know, getting there and being ultra aggressive and then kind of doubling down on it, yeah, it sucks. But at the end of the day, you do what got you there, and that's what he did. And unfortunately, it just didn't work out. And you know, I thought more than anything, the play calls were interesting. You know, I talked about it on Twitter the other day when they ran. On that third down play, they decided to line Amon-Ra St. Brown up in the backfield, and you're like, oh, that's an interesting wrinkle, right?
And then
you hand it off to him, and you're like, okay, that's a dumb play call, and I get it. You're trying to catch him off guard, right? And so it's like, no, that's not what it should have been, like. You literally on that drive, you know, not to bore people too much, but half court left for 16 yards to Sam Laporta. Run 6 yards, David Montgomery. Run 7 yards, David Montgomery. Run 5 yards, David Montgomery. And then you get a incompletion, then you get by the way, to a wide open Sam Laporta, if he hits him, it's a touchdown and kind of game over at that point, 31-10. But instead you end up with a 6 yard pass to Laporta. So it's third and four, and you line Amon-Ra St. Brown up in the backfield, and you run for 2 yards, and I'm like, wait, David Montgomery's literally averaging 6 yards a carry on this drive. Like, why would you not even have him in? And then, you know, like you said, the draw by Josh Reynolds, that is a tough play. And then it just becomes luck after that, right? Like, there's just a lot of luck that seems to follow
the
49ers and Brock Purdy around.
Let's talk about Brock Purdy, because I think it is both things. It is unfair to simply call him a game manager, because he does make plays. There is an elite level There is an elite level to his play that has elevated San Francisco's offense, and that is his ability to throw guys open, his fearlessness in throwing down the middle, down into the intermediate level of the field with incredible accuracy. And so there is some elite to his play. So I'm not going to say it. However, we will say he is unquestionably lucky, where he has super interceptable pass. Now, he was picked off once. He should have been picked off two other times in that game. And
yeah, I've just never seen a guy throw so many passes that aren't even like hard to intercept don't get intercepted.
Well, congrats Brandon Ayuk, who's turned into the guy this year, but oh my gosh, you go from, hey, that should have been a pick, to, wait, that's a 51-yard pass?
Right.
Oh my gosh. And so I don't want to say, I don't know what to think about Brock Purdy other than he's doing literally everything that he's been asked to do, and he's doing it at a super high level. And being a second-year player, the fortune that he's had, so there are obviously some throws that he's making that are bad throws, they're interceptable throws. Guess what a young player often does? He gets better at not making those throws. And so the future looks bright now.
But the crazy thing to think about is if any of those interceptable balls are intercepted, we're not even having this conversation.
Correct.
That's correct. The crazy thing about it. And so, you know, it's interesting. And so you take away the lucky, you know, bounce off the face mask and Brandon Ayuk catch. Think about it. The next play, Jahmyr Gibbs fumbles. You know, the very, very next play, he fumbles and is recovered. And you know, you go through this season and you look and you're like, okay, you know, was fumbling a problem for him? No, it wasn't. It wasn't. I mean, fumbling was not a problem for him. And you're like, really? This is the game you freaking fumble, man? like it's just crazy, crazy luck that seems. And again, like you said, it's not to take away from Brock, but it just, there are very few players that get the lucky bounces that he has seemed to be the benefactor of receiving, especially the last 2 weeks, but, you know, in his career. And that's where I think people get frustrated, because then they want to highlight the good, which there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of good, but they want to highlight the good and overlook, like, if somebody just catches that pass, then we're not even having this conversation. In fact, we're probably having the conversation of, like, do they move on? Like, are they going to go get somebody else? Like, how do they? But instead, it's like, oh, you know, it's this magical story. And it's like, it's a great story. He's had a great, like you said, two seasons. But to not acknowledge that there was a lot of luck involved in everything, including him being picked and working out for them, you know, after the Trey Lance fiasco, is just, it kind of flies in the face of everything we know about sports, right?
Yeah. The fact, it's frustrating. As Cardinals fans, it just the incredible, there's two teams, the 49ers and the Packers. You look at them and you're like, how? For two different reasons, because the Packers now appear to have a franchise quarterback for the third straight time. They go from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers to Jordan Love and don't miss a beat. Like, how do you do that? Like, teams who have a franchise quarterback and who retires or moves on, that is traditionally a, like, your unicorn that you're fighting to find for a decade. Then the 49ers, when you mess up, and when you have a quarterback fail like Trey Lance, they trade up all the assets to get Trey Lance and draft him, and he doesn't work out. That's supposed to set your franchise back years. What did they do? Nah, no big deal. Last pick in the draft, get the guy that has the skill set that has the perfect skill set for your offense. And, you know, can he maintain that level when you cannot maintain the level of talent around him? That's what we're going to find out after next season, because it's not until after next season that they can even broach the possibility of a contract extension. But I know Seth said this, and I'm going to go ahead and say it, the kind of the best scenario for the Cardinals in this Super Bowl would be one, have the Chiefs win so that the 49ers lose, and two, that they end up paying Brock Purdy a massive contract, because as good as he's been, unless he is Tom Brady or like Tom Brady in that ability, you're going to, we'll see likely some decrease in production/luck if they are unable to have the superstars like Deebo Samuel or Trent Williams around him.
Yeah, and so, like you said, we'll see how it works out. But, you know, to go back to the Lions, I think a lot of this needs to be looked at again through the scope of, in the lens of, the Cardinals, is like, that's what you're building, right? That's how you're building. And so, you know, we talked about the other day, but 3-13-1, Goff, you know, has a decent season, kind of on par. He only played 14 games, and if you put his numbers in the blender with Kyler's, they're similar. Kyler was a little better, you know, in year one of the everything. you know, and they come out of 2022 and you know, they get Aiden Hutchinson, obviously, and Jameson Williams, and Williams hasn't really worked out the way they kind of hoped, but they ended up getting, you know, a guy like Josh Pascal, who's been okay. And then Kirby Joseph has been just a great, great pick. You know, and they go 9-8 after, you know, and I think we talked about it, just a abysmal 1-6 start to the season last year. Goff puts up great numbers, over 4,400 yards, 29 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, 65% completion, makes the Pro Bowl. You kind of look at it and you're like, okay, they're on the right track, they're on the right way. And then, you know, they get to this year. And again, we've talked about it before, but you know, you look at what they did this year, the drafting Jahmyr Gibbs at 12, drafting Jack Campbell at 18, drafting Sam LaPorta at 34, drafting Brian Branch at 45. I are any of those positions really like positions of sexy positions that you draft?
And you question the value at them. You're like, running back top 10? That guy?
Right.
And then you're right. Like, off the ball linebacker? There? You like Sam LaPorta was the one you're like, okay, that makes sense. And right. Brian Branch as well. But like their first round picks, you're like, are they going to regret those? Now, here's the thing to note about the Cardinals. Who was the guy that helped build the youth on that Lions team?
Yeah.
None Dave. Other than assistant general manager for the Cardinals, Dave Sears, which is exciting, right? That's somewhat exciting because if this is something that is transferable from one franchise to another, then we can see, then you've got the talent evaluators in place to do what we've been waiting for the draft. Because let's be honest, we all love Steve Keim's picks early on. And then as years went on, they just didn't work out. And so getting value and getting splash early and value late over multiple years, that's what the Lions are getting. If the Cardinals can get that from Dave Sears and this scouting department and this front office, that's what they need.
Well, and I think the other thing is, and people have to really kind of be willing to sit down and watch it and go through it, but you have to be okay with next year being an 8-9 win season. You know, and maybe they don't make the playoffs, right?
And honestly, like, I think we all believe that that's a reasonable thing, is that the vibe around the Cardinals is if they do a couple of things that they'll compete for the postseason, and that's what you're looking at. You're looking, you know, between 8 and 10 wins where you're maybe making it, maybe not. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, and so that's how you want to look at this roster and this Lions franchise and what they've built. And you know, and I did think what Dan Campbell said after the game was very accurate and poetic. And I don't know if you heard, but, you know, basically he said that you're not, you know, this sucks so bad because there's no guarantee that you do this again, that you make it this far again. Like, and that's something that we've talked about that I kind of wish fans would understand, right? Like you said, the Chiefs at this point, the Packers, and people will go, well, those are the well-run organizations. I don't discount that. I truly don't. But it's not the norm. I mean, you look at a franchise like the Indianapolis Colts, right? A kind of a doldrums franchise similar to the Cardinals. They get Marshall Faulk, right? And things start to kind of look up a little bit, right? And then they fall into the first pick and they end up with Peyton Manning. And then all of a sudden their entire direction as a franchise turns around, and then he, you know, gets hurt and they have to move on to Andrew Luck, and that's, you know, no pun intended, just luck, right? Like it just is luck. And then from there, but you look at it and it's just been a complete S show since then, right? Like they've gone back and forth. They've had, you know, four head coaches since Luck retired. You know, they've had a different starting quarterback every single year since Andrew Luck retired. Like, all of that is just insane to think about. And that's kind of the norm. That's kind of, you know, and you, whether it's like the Jacksonville Jaguars, when they blew their opportunity I think it was the Patriots that year, right? In 2017, when Calais went over there, and they've never really been close since. I mean, I know they lost in the divisional round last year, but you know, they've really never been close since. And you just look at it, it's not easy. And so, like, as you're building it and you're seeing it come to fruition, enjoy it, because it literally is fleeting. I mean, people talk about the Seahawks, and rightfully so. I mean, they had a fantastic run under Pete Carroll. But, you know, there was only really a 3-year window where they were really Super Bowl contenders. After that, they were missing the playoffs or losing in the wild card round, right? Like, you know, so from 13 to really maybe 16, you considered them like a true contender. So a fantastic 4-year run. And then from there, it's like, you know, miss the playoffs, lose in the wild card. They lost in the divisional in 2019. They lost in the wild card, missed the playoffs, lost the wild card, missed the playoff. Like, and so yeah, it's great that they, you know, were in the playoffs almost every single year under Pete Carroll, but they were never really contenders. And so that's how you have to look at it, is like, what do you want? And now they may end up with what, their fifth choice as a coach, because Ben Johnson decided not to leave Detroit. And now the full court press is on Mike McDonald, the brilliant Ravens defensive coordinator. And so you look at that, and that was the other thing I was going to say to you. So I was curious, after this weekend, you know, the stars kind of going out. Obviously, we know about Reed. We know about Shanahan. Those guys aren't going anywhere. But let me ask you this. Why is Steve Spagnuolo not getting a second chance? Or maybe a third chance? I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. Is it just simply that simple?
I think that's simple. It's as simple as that. He's old.
He's 64, so to your point, yeah. And so
if in fairness, how well did Vic Fangio, who was the last, you know, old defensive coach, fare as head coach?
Right. No, that's super fair. And, you know, I'm just curious because, you know, we hear all the time about, you know, all these guys getting passed up. And then you look at Spags, and he's probably done the most, you know, to see him, you know, get continually passed up, and maybe he just doesn't want to do it. And, you know, that's something to think about with Ben Johnson too. And then to bring it back to the Cardinals, right? Like, is Drew Petzing's, you know, and obviously we're talking about a guy that was the OC on a 4-win team that, you know, the bulk statistics look really not great, right? But I, you know, we'll talk about it, but the end of the season was just so brilliant that you look at it and you go, okay, is this a guy that, you know, if they go 9-8 next year, that is going to be gone? Like, is that where, I mean, because he's
a possibility. That's about definitely, yeah, a possibility.
Because he's only going to be 37, so he'll be 38 after next year. You know, he'll have 2 years as an offensive coordinator. You know, he's been a quarterback coach. Like, he seems to have, you know, like the juice, the goods. And so, you know, the hope is, right, that he's, that he goes the Ben Johnson route and is like, hey, I'm going to stay maybe one more year, you know, and they're similar age. Johnson's 37, he'll be 38 this year. You know, Johnson's been a OC for 2 seasons. And so, you know, I think that's kind of the hope with this, is that you can get to year 3 with Petzing. I don't think Rallis is going to be under, right, you know, because they were just so bad this year. I don't think he'll be a hot commodity quite, and he's so young, right?
Yeah. Like
barely 30. You know, so I don't think he'll be a hot commodity quite yet, but it's definitely coming. Like that these guys are going to, if they continue, if they go the Vikings or sorry, the Lions trend, that they're going to be commodities. And that's going to be questions of, for me, the questions are you prepared? Cause I think that's what we talked about with San Francisco, right? Like to kind of wrap all of this up, that they've done so well is that every time they lose somebody, and makes it really easy when you have Kyle Shanahan as basically your offensive play caller, right? But when you look at the fact that, you know, they have basically been prepared to lose these guys.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. You got Robert Saleh. Okay, so you bring in D'Amico Ryans. No worry about him. He's great. Now he's a head coach, and you bring in Steve Wilks, and that defense is, you know, we worried a little bit about Steve Wilks, but let's be honest. Their defense has not really lost a step. They are more susceptible to the run than they have been in the past. But yeah, that's, they just keep plugging along. They just keep plugging along. They've got the talent. They've got the system in place. And that's, you know, we wondered why, like, people viewed Shanahan as a genius head coach. And when we saw so little success outside of Jimmy Garoppolo, you're like, why is he not getting what? And because there's a reason why, because there's obviously something there to his coaching, to his scheme, to what he's doing there, and to now take the success that he was having with Garoppolo at quarterback and then do it with a 7th round draft pick, in his last 2 years is pretty special. So,
yeah. And so that's going to be the next. And by the way, if that's happening, that's fantastic. Like that means that this is a franchise that people want to emulate. And when have we ever said that before?
Very rarely, if ever. Very rarely, if ever. And with that, coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. We've got one segment left, and we're going to talk offseason. We're going to talk Cardinals. We're just going to talk about what are some cap-saving moves that they can do. We'll talk about what they are and whether they're worth doing. That's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. We're now approaching, about 6 weeks away from free agency. The Cardinals, based on, over the cap, it says they have a projected $42 million available in cap space. I mean, we can look at some other stuff, but, you know, that's a decent amount. But is that the impact amount that we want this offseason? What are moves that we can make? I'm going to offer up these, and here's the thing. I actually got a contract thanks to someone. I actually got a hold of DJ Humphrey's contract. He has no injury guarantees for 2024. Okay? That said, so could they cut him? They could. They could cut him. It is not nearly the savings you would expect. He has a $22.9 million cap hit this year. If they cut him outright, now that there's other things involved, because he was injured in a foot, like the team is responsible for his rehab and recovery. So they have to cover that. He would qualify for workman's comp here in Arizona for another things. But in terms of cap stuff, and I will admit, I actually missed a detail that I should have caught. I thought that he was under his last year in 2024, which made it, you know, he's not going to play this year. It makes sense to cut him, but he's still got 2025, and so even if there's a potential for him to come back for the last, you know, four games maybe of the season, the last two, three, four games, and then depending what the Cardinals had done at tackle, you could be in a position as he enters the final year of his contract that he could be traded, or used or extended or whatever. But here's the numbers. So just a straight up cut, you would end up saving $9 million against the cap and carry $13.9 million in dead money. And so that is the aside from the next guy on the list, that is the largest change that you can do. The downside to that is it's twofold. One is what that would look like to the people in the locker room, where you have a team captain, you're starting left tackle for years, who's still under contract in 2025, and you go and cut him after he tore his ACL. That would not be good for team culture. I have a hard time believing that that will be what they end up doing. However, it will save them $9 million against the cap, and if they wanted to post June 1st him, then you gain more significant numbers, and that would be a $15.9 million in savings, but you're going to deal with an extra $6.9 against the cap in 2025, which essentially is what you would have been looking at next year had you kept him on the roster this year and then moved on from him next. You'd have $15 million in savings this year and $15 million in savings the following year. Interesting thing, because with him out, if you cut him and you save $9 million, you're not probably getting a tackle at his caliber unless you're going young and you're going to draft a guy. And, you know, we know that Paris can move on. Paris Johnson could. And I would guess they're going to move him to left tackle this offseason, especially with DJ's injury. If DJ went into the offseason healthy, I think they would have rolled with DJ for another year, and they would have prepared Paris to play left tackle in 2025. That said, would you make that cut?
No, and I think you highlighted the biggest reason, and that's just locker room culture. It's just not something you could do at this juncture and kind of keep the locker room. You know, it's not a situation like DeAndre Hopkins. It's not a situation like Zach Ertz. It's not those situations. This is a guy that literally sacrificed. Yeah, and sacrificed him to be here and to be playing. And, you know, you move on from him, it's just going to set a bad precedent within this new regime. So, you know, not something you want to do, in my opinion.
And, you know, had he been healthy, maybe you trade him. You can't, right, obviously. But so that I don't think they'll do that. Maybe they do something with this contract. I don't know. But there isn't anything in his contract that, so there are no injuries guarantees. His injury guarantees were only for 2023. The one that would be the single most cap-saving move would be to trade Buda Baker, in which case you would save $14.6 million against the cap. And you'd carry $3.9 million in dead money. That's fine. But we detailed the Buda Baker case last week in our last show. So we don't need to necessarily go about that, but you know, if we're looking for cap savings and if you're looking at safety production, that might be the greatest value. Now, this is different. It's not going to be cut. And if he's traded, it's because Buda wants to be traded. Let's be honest. He's entered the last year of his deal. If you're going to trade him, this is the year to do it. You could extend him, but if you're talking about saving $14.6 million in cap space, for this year, you can get an impact safety and an impact another player and then a depth player in terms of cap hit for what you have in Big Jalen and in Buddhist cap hit this year. You could get two impact players and a depth player in terms of cap hit. Now that there's, because you can usually the first year of the cap is your lowest.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, we talked about that last week. I think it's probably the best move from a team building standpoint, just in terms of making sure that they, you know, are investing in the right spots, as you kind of alluded to. But it's hard to, you know, separate the player from the team in this sense, and that's, you know, Buda and stuff like that. So it'll be an interesting decision, and one I'm glad I don't have to make.
Well, I think ultimately, like I said, it's going to come down to this. Does Buda want to be traded?
Right, exactly.
If he wants to stay, I think they'll make it work, and they probably will make the contract work. You know, they go down the line. You could – now, this is, again, you could save $5.9 million by cutting James Conner. That's dumb. That you save a lot of money that way because he's going to have an $8.9 million cap hit. But what the reality is this offseason is that you have to extend to him. Like, you have to either trade or extend either one of those players. And Conner, in this case, because he's so important to the offense, you have to extend him. Kaiser White, again, that would make sense based on play, but you can save $4 million against the cap. Although $1 million of his salary is fully guaranteed, which means that's not likely going to happen. Will Hernandez, now, like, he is not a player because of his on-field performance. You would cut him. But if you feel you have a guy in-house that's ready to take over, a move, you could cut him, save or trade him. Save $4 million against the cap, carry $1.25 million in dead money. That doesn't seem like something that's likely to happen, would you think?
No, I don't think so.
You know, Matt Prater, no. Like, you could save $3.5 million if you moved on from him, but
I mean, I'm cutting him if he didn't miss that kick on purpose.
Unfortunately for those Xavien Collins, you get nothing. You get no space. Right. He's got his contract fully guaranteed. Still is a first round pick. They will have to decide whether to the fifth year option. I'd be surprised if they would. Here's an interesting one, and that's Yelda Froholt. You can, so he's due to, he's going to count $3.8 million against the cap. If you cut him, it's $3.2 million in savings with only $550,000 in dead money. That would seem like that you could make, but the problem is you don't have your center on the roster, and Froholt wasn't bad. And honestly, like we talked about, it's one of the biggest surprises that we saw of the season.
Yeah, I don't think it happens this year, and I know he's not under contract after next year, but I just don't think that's something you can do this year with. I think you have to have as much continuation along the offensive line as possible. The thing is, because you do have the one situation at left tackle, and you'll probably want to try to upgrade at left guard, correct? I mean, that's something that you probably want to try to upgrade that position as things go along. You probably don't want to mess with the center position this year.
That would make sense. That would make sense. Dennis Gardeck, team leader in sacks, only six. $3.8 million will count against the cap this year. And if we are to assume that they're going to upgrade the position, we're talking about a special teams plus specialized pass rusher. Now, I'm not saying that that would be a tough one. Also, a team captain, but you could save $3.1 million as he enters the last year of his 3-year, $12 million deal. I don't know if I mean, that's a thing you could do, but is that worth it? Especially when you have a guy who can be a, like, he does give you plus pass rush when you compare him to other special teams type players. You get elite special teams play, and then you get, you know, good depth edge pass rush if you consider him a depth. Now, if he's playing as a starter, then that there's a different story, right?
Right.
Zach Pascal, this I think is an inevitability. He's due to be $2.7 million against the cap. You cut him, you carry $750,000 of dead money and save $1.9 million. I think his presence on the roster was important last year, but
unneeded going forward if right, you addressed it like you should.
Yeah, that's completely unnecessary. Kelvin Beachum, you could cut, but
you can't now. I still wouldn't, but unless you draft somebody, and like I said, I still wouldn't, but if you draft somebody, you open up you open up the possibility, but it's not, like I said, I still wouldn't do it.
Right. Right. You look at Rondale Moore, and I don't know what they think of him. 1.6, you could, he's going to count 2.2 against the cap this next year. You can save $1.6 million. I think, I guess that depends on
what you do in the offseason.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
well, and that's what's going to be interesting to me, because, like, even going back to Froholt, which I would argue against vehemently, which I never thought I would have said. You know?
Who knew? Who knew that after they signed Yelda Froholt, we would be arguing for his return?
But even, like, unless you're going to draft, you know, Jackson Power Johnson, yes, that's a real prospect's name, you know, in the first round, which is basically the equivalent of drafting Tyler Linderbaum a couple of years ago, right? Then you can't cut him. And quite frankly, you can't cut him until the draft, because that's a pick you make at 27 or 35, and you have no way of knowing if that player is going to be there.
So,
you know, like you're saying with the draft and the stuff, those are guys that might end up getting cut May or, you know, post June 1 or whatever. But, like, I don't think any of those guys get cut outside of, like you said, Pascal at this juncture, just because of injuries or kind of how things are laid out.
And I think there's one guy left worth mentioning, and that's simply Dennis Daly. Yeah, he fell, like, he went from being, like, offensive lineman number 6 to inactive at the end of the year. He only counts $1.8 million against the cap next year, but you save $1.6 if you cut him, unless you absolutely feel you need that veteran backup, like you don't project him as a starter and you just project him as a backup. I mean, $1.7 million in cap space for a veteran lineman, it really isn't much, but it does save you $1.6 million.
Yeah, and I think every little penny is going to count as you head into this offseason. Because, you know, we mentioned it, this is the offseason where you probably want to invest in veterans on the defensive side of the ball, and you want to invest in young talent on the offensive side of the ball. And you have that opportunity to really dictate things in that way. But you have to do it the right way. And so every little piece counts, because, you know, a guy that I've mentioned on here before, but I mean, hell, even a guy like Calais Campbell, I don't know, you know, if his relationship is good enough with the Cardinals, but, you know, a guy like Calais Campbell coming back on a 1 year, you know, type of deal at what his salary would be, I think, you know, a great benefit to this team that desperately needs interior defenders, right? So, but even if you don't go with him, you know, a guy like, you know, Daquan Jones, who's old, 32, but you can sign him for 1 year at $6 million, that helps out. A guy like Maurice Hurst, who played, you know, sparingly, but well for the Cleveland Browns, one of the best defenses in the NFL this year, you can get him for, you know, 1 year, $3 million, $4 million, like, or 2 years, $7 million if he wants a little more guarantee, right? And that helps out. And no offense to Pascal and Dennis Daly, but that they don't have that same impact going forward.
Nope. And with that, we wrap up this edition of the Rise of Zero podcast, episode 511, Best Hour of Cardinals Talk of the Web. We should have a show coming up this week, but if not, I think that the plan will just have to topics. But next week we will talk Senior Bowl, since that's happening this weekend. And so we've got more that's coming in. We're going to wrap up this edition of the show. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rue. This is episode 511. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again in a couple days.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.
Whoa!